Wednesday in American politics is a day of cascading legal and institutional stories, and I want to give each of them the weight they deserve rather than rushing through. Start with Senator Lindsey Graham, who died at 71 from an aortic dissection. Whatever you thought of his politics and his record on foreign policy, campaign finance, and judicial confirmations drew sharp responses across the spectrum. Graham was a 24-year Senate veteran who had genuine relationships across party lines and served as an important voice on the Armed Services Committee. His death is a human loss first, but it immediately creates a Senate vacancy in South Carolina with real political stakes.
And the succession story is already unfolding in an unusual way. Graham's sister has been sworn in as the interim senator for South Carolina. That's a striking personal dimension to an otherwise standard gubernatorial appointment process. The governor of South Carolina, a Republican, would appoint the interim, and apparently made a choice that kept it literally in the family, at least temporarily. South Carolina is a reliably Republican state, so the immediate partisan math doesn't change dramatically. But Graham's absence on the Armed Services Committee and in foreign policy debates will be felt, particularly given the active situations in the Gulf and Ukraine.
The Trump legal and political stories today form a dense cluster. A federal judge has voided the IRS settlement, the so-called anti-weaponization fund deal, that would have established a $1.776 billion fund and, crucially, included an addendum barring IRS audits of Trump and his family. The judge didn't just void the settlement, they referred the lawyers involved for professional discipline. That's a serious rebuke. The legal architecture of that settlement, attempting to use a civil settlement to preemptively immunize a sitting president from tax audits, was always constitutionally questionable, and this ruling suggests at least one federal judge found it deeply problematic.
Trump paying E. Jean Carroll $5.6 million in the sexual abuse case is a resolution of a civil judgment that has been grinding through courts for years. The payment closes that particular financial obligation. But the political and reputational dimensions of that judgment, made in 2023, appealed multiple times, remain part of the public record. Separately, emails obtained by reporters showing that Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche was personally driving the administration's retribution campaign against perceived political enemies is a significant story that goes to the independence of the Justice Department. Blanche was framed publicly as a moderating influence on the department's more aggressive tendencies. The emails suggest the opposite.
The DOJ subpoenaing four New York Times journalists to testify in a grand jury proceeding, combined with the Times countersuing the EEOC over what it calls politically motivated retaliation for its journalism, these two stories together represent a significant escalation of the administration's conflict with the press. Grand jury subpoenas to journalists are serious instruments that compel testimony about sources, and the Times historically fights them aggressively. The EEOC lawsuit adds another front, the agency investigating the Times' diversity programs in a way the paper characterizes as targeted retaliation.
The Wisconsin referral of Elon Musk to prosecutors over alleged voter bribery connects to the broader question of what Musk's political activities constitute under election law. The allegation involves payments or incentives to voters in Wisconsin, which would fall under federal bribery statutes regardless of how they're framed. Musk's legal team will argue this is constitutionally protected political speech and spending. The prosecutors will argue it crosses the line into direct voter inducement. This will be an important test case for how election law applies to tech billionaires using their personal wealth in novel ways to influence elections.
Judge vacating the Proud Boys' January 6th convictions at the DOJ's request is a story that cuts to the heart of what the current Justice Department is doing with the legacy of January 6th prosecutions. Hundreds of cases were brought over several years. The current DOJ has been systematically moving to reduce or eliminate many of them. Having a judge actually vacate convictions on DOJ request, as opposed to just dropping charges, is a more aggressive move. And it puts the judiciary in an uncomfortable position of being asked to undo what a previous DOJ prosecuted.
Trump's primetime address Thursday night where he plans to present what he calls declassified intelligence showing foreign interference in the 2020 election. That's a story we'll cover more deeply when the address actually happens, but the preview context matters. This comes after the administration has already gutted the Election Assistance Commission, and DOJ has issued threats to prosecute state officials over voter rolls. Reading those moves together, Thursday's speech looks less like a declassification disclosure and more like a constructed narrative designed to justify institutional changes that have already occurred.
Justices Kagan and Barrett testifying before a House panel seeking $228 million for Supreme Court security is a rare moment of cross-ideological cooperation. Kagan and Barrett represent the court's liberal and conservative wings, and they appeared together to make the case for a 38% expected increase in threat levels. That number, 38% more threats anticipated, is a striking figure that speaks to how polarized public sentiment about the court has become since the Dobbs decision in 2022 and subsequent rulings.